You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 20th of August 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. And we are live today because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, we're not talking about one explosion today, but we're talking about two. The number two is going to be very significant today, I have the feeling.
Yes, I really wasn't aware of this. What we're going to be talking about today happened quite some time back, 15 years ago, in fact. But there is a very high profile trial that has been taking place and the verdict is now in. And this trial was of the assassination of Rafik Hariri, the Lebanese prime minister. I mean, I've never known Lebanon to be so much in the news as it is at the moment with the big explosion of the fertilizer, the riots that are now taking place, the government that is stepping down. I mean, it is really suspicious that you have something like that happen and then all the people get together and say, let's get rid of the government. That's what we need now, isn't it? No government when we've just had the docks blown up and we've got no supplies. I mean, I find that very suspicious. And now on top of all of that, we have this verdict that has come in about this assassination of Rafik Hariri, the previous prime minister. Matt, do you want to make any comments on those three subjects there before we really get deeply into this?
Well, Rafik Hariri had a tendency to be pro-Syrian, but he also was involved. He was an oligarch. You know, when he became prime minister, he was worth about $1 billion. When he was murdered, he was worth about $15 billion. The reconstruction of Beirut was done by his company without any kind of bidding. So, you know, he wasn't a clean figure. But, you know, his convoy was attacked on the 14th of February, 2005. Of course, the West immediately said this was Hezbollah, you know, trying to create chaos, trying to create a war between Shia and Sunni, because Hariri was a Sunni. Afterwards, of course, you had the Cedar Revolution, which was one of the first color revolutions in the Middle East that drove the Syrian army out. And it, you know, and then, of course, Israel's tanks rolled into South Lebanon like it did just recently. So, you know, Israel is really the only entity that that benefited from all of this. And the evidence that Israel's involved in the assassination of Hariri and thereby plunging the country into chaos is overwhelming.
Well, according to the verdict of this trial, it was somebody connected with Hezbollah that did this. That's what I've been reading about in the headlines. That's what the BBC have been telling me. They've been trying to draw these links together with Hezbollah, and I haven't heard any mention of Israel, yet we have quite a serious Israeli link. And we've got some information here from globalresearch.ca. And they say, in the Middle East, the link between political machinations, espionage, and assassination is either clear as day or clear as mud. As for the yet unsolved case of the February 2005 murder of Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, the underpinnings of this covert operation, including the role of Israel, have now surfaced. A crackdown on Israeli spy rings operating in Lebanon has resulted in more than 70 arrests over the past 18 months. Included among them are four high-ranking Lebanese army and general security officers, one having spied for the Mossad since 1984. A significant breakthrough in the ongoing investigation occurred in late June and culminated in the arrest of Charbel Kouazi, head of transmission and broadcasting at Alpha, one of Lebanon's two state-owned mobile service providers. According to the Lebanese daily As-Safia, Kouazi confessed to installing computer programs and planting electronic chips in Alpha transmitters. These could then be used by Israeli intelligence to monitor communications, locate and target individuals for assassination, and potentially deploy viruses capable of erasing recorded information in the contact lines. Kouazi's collaboration with Israel reportedly dates back 14 years. On July the 12th, a second arrest at Alpha was made. Tariq Al-Rabah, an engineer and partner of Kouazi, was apprehended on charges of spying for Israel and compromising national security. A few days later, a third Alpha employee was similarly detained. Israel has refused to comment on the arrests. Nevertheless, their apparent ability to have penetrated Lebanon's military and telecommunications sectors has rattled the country and urgently raised security concerns. Now, we're talking about 15 years back that this assassination took place, and they're saying that this disconnection goes back 14 years. But what this shows is that Israel have got access to the main mobile telephone communications network in Lebanon. Now, what could that have to do with this Harari assassination, Matt?
Keep in mind that there's a reason that Hezbollah maintains its own mobile system for communications. And they do this at great expense because they're convinced, long before this happened, that Alpha and the other state-owned telecommunications enterprise were penetrated by CIA, Mossad, and in fact, some of the investment money came from either the U.S. or Israel. I talked about how Hariri was interested in foreign investment and rebuilding the country after the Civil War. Israel and the U.S. were heavily involved in this. The contracts were huge that he gave away. And Alpha was part of this. And because Hezbollah has its own system, they refuse to use these. They're able to produce evidence, we'll talk about here in a minute, that almost proves Israel's involvement in the killing of the prime minister, and which of course was immediately blamed on Syria and Hezbollah, and they refused to undo it. Although Israel's, it's always part of these peace treaties, and Hezbollah says no, this is part of the reason why. This is how we're absolutely certain that Alpha is an Israeli asset.
Well, whoever it was that did the assassination, they could have used this telecommunications network to identify where Harafi was, surely. Well, let's have a look and see what global research have to say this has to do with the assassination. Outside the obvious deleterious ramifications of high-ranking Lebanese military officers working for Israel, the very legitimacy of the Special Tribunal for Lebanon is now in question. The SDL is the UN-sanctioned body tasked with prosecuting those responsible for the assassination of the late Prime Minister. On February 14th, 2005, 1,000 kilos of explosives detonated near Hariri's passing motorcade, killing him and 21 others. Commander-in-Chief of the Israel Defense Forces, Gabi Ashkenazi, predicted, with lots of wishes, that the situation in Lebanon would deteriorate in September after the SDL indicted Hezbollah for Hariri's assassination. Ashkenazi's gleeful, prescient testimony to the Knesset's Foreign Affairs Committee betrays what Israel hopes the fallout from the SDL's report will be: fomentation of civil strife and discord among Lebanon's sectarian groups, generally divided into pro- and anti-Syria factions. Ashkenazi anticipated this to happen, of course, because he knew Israel's unfettered access to critical phone records will frame Hezbollah for the crime. Israel's agents and operatives in Lebanon and its infiltration of a telecoms network have been exposed. At the very least, the SDL must recognize that evidence of alleged Hezbollah involvement in Hariri's death, a group that historically enjoyed good ties with the late premier, is wholly tainted and likely doctored. The arrest of Kouazi and Al-Rabah in the breakup of Israeli spy rings should prompt the STL to shift its focus to the only regional player that has benefited from Hariri's murder, one that will continue to do so if and when their designs to implicate Hezbollah are realised. Well, the problem is, Matt, this trial is over and they've come out with the verdict. So them coming up with this information now and saying, well, the evidence is tainted because it was basically provided by an Israeli spy ring, that isn't going to overturn this verdict, is it? Unless it's appealed? I mean, what good is this? What good can this do other than, you know, get people like me and yourself talking about it?
Well, I think that's part of it. It has more to do with public opinion in Lebanon and changing people's minds on the question. The weapon that killed the 21 people had uranium in it. And in fact, the survivors had to be treated for it. And there was a few military experts that were interviewed during the trial that said this is, you know, a combination of nuclear and nanotechnology triggering an explosion like this. And it was a missile. And it was guided by the most sophisticated equipment, except that Hariri's car was equipped with jamming devices, very, very good jamming devices. Problem is, the jamming devices were made in Israel. In fact, most of the security that Hariri was using had either was made in Israel or was closely connected to an Israeli company. This weapon melted Hariri's gold watch. It was a solid gold watch that melted right there. The explosion was very odd. You saw no torn flesh. There was no shattered bones. They looked like clay statues sitting there, which is a very, very odd image. The other problem is, and of course, Hezbollah had no access to something like that. That's brand new technology. But the U.S. and Israel both had their spy satellites permanently switched on. They had AWACS over Lebanon. They had live feeds over it. And they could show if there's a drone or not. And these missiles usually are shot from drones. Of course, both Washington and Tel Aviv said, no, we're not turning these over. So these kind of things, you know, and they're always talking about, you have to cooperate with the STL. And they have, they're sitting on clear evidence and they refuse to turn it over. So that to me is a smoking gun, no pun intended.
And the STL is a UN organizations, so they're hardly likely to be very keen to look into the origins of this this evidence that was given to them. But surely if Hezbollah have their own telephone network that they use, how could they then say, well, we've got this evidence from these phone records that shows that it's Hezbollah, if Hezbollah's records will have been on a different phone network? Can you answer that one, Matt?
Well, we'll see here in a minute that Hezbollah has actually offered counter evidence. And this is part of the reason why Hezbollah was, and the Syrian government, who normally are allies, have been completely exonerated. Well, this is a sophisticated attack. This kid couldn't have been working on his own. So it only really leaves one player. The investigation was so marred by irregularities. This is not the Nuremberg. They had four Lebanese generals in jail and asked each one of them, well, you know, we'll let you out if you cooperate. They're not really bound by normal procedure like The Hague often is. This is adjacent to The Hague. So this is it's a bizarre situation. And with the recent explosion, which again was very sophisticated, couldn't be done by just some guy with ammonium nitrate, rushing to judgment is a bad idea. So having their own telecommunication system permits them to override anything that the Israelis or the Americans say. But again, the fact that they're sitting on this evidence and Hezbollah has their own shows that this is an Israeli attack, and the violence that came afterwards, therefore, is their fault.
Well, I wonder if there isn't also a connection with these allegations of weapons of mass destruction that Syria was supposedly holding on to 5 years later when the unrest started in Syria. If you remember, there were all these accusations that Syria had these weapons of mass destruction and Syria was responsible for this, that and the other. And Assad said, well, he was going to get rid of any of his gas, chemical weapons, what have you. And they had, I think Russia went over there to watch them destroy them. But I wonder if they weren't trying to say Syria has got these weapons and Syria was involved in this, trying to sort of deflect attention away from Israel. Well, the media has been framing Hezbollah as guilty for this. 15 years later, on August the 4th, another explosion rocked Lebanon. This time, the fingers were again pointing at Hezbollah and its Iranian backers. And once again, Israeli tanks crossed into Lebanon. After years of investigating the first incident, on Tuesday, August the 18th, 2020, Syria and Hezbollah were acquitted of involvement in the 2005 explosion. Judges at a UN-backed tribunal said on Tuesday that there was no evidence the leadership of the Hezbollah militant group and Syria were involved in the 2005 suicide truck bomb assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. Yet, reading the Western media headlines, one would think that the judge had found Hezbollah guilty, just as the most recent explosion was blamed on Hezbollah. But what would Hezbollah gain from such horrific acts? If not Hezbollah, cui bono? The answer is simple. Proving it is not. Beirut has been devastated, and as with 2006, every foe is out to grab a part of this beautiful country. During the 2006 war, while Israel bombed Lebanon, Carlisle profited greatly, as did the Saudis, the US, and of course, the Israelis. The systematic destruction of Lebanon translated into significant opportunity for the Carlisle Group, and with the crisis, they announced a $1.3 billion fund for investment in the region. They were not alone. The rush was on. The big investment banks, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Lehman Brothers, all increased their presence in the region. Israel, the perpetrator as the benefactor, received an increase of $500 million additional in aid package from the US in September of the same year. So I wasn't aware of this, Matt. So there was all this money that was actually made out of the destruction of Lebanon. Is it, and this is talking about back then in 2006. So I think the same thing is going to happen now after this explosion. I mean, we don't know if this was accidental or not. I mean, I haven't really commented on that, but you think the same thing is going to happen? There's going to be a lot of money that's made out of this recent one?
Yeah, we need to remember that, you know, foreign policy is driven by private interests. The U.S. government is financed by private interests, therefore it functions to their benefit. Same thing would go for Iraq, same thing would go for Afghanistan, Somalia, anything else like that. Now the U.S. is offering a substantial aid package to Lebanon, but with stipulations. It has to open up its economy. It has to have no ties with Syria. It has to disenfranchise Hezbollah, things like this. And people forget that Hezbollah is an extremely popular organization. They're elected in the Gaza Strip in Israel, and they have a huge faction in the Lebanese parliament. They're a social services organization, and they have an army as sophisticated as, you know, anybody else in the area. So this is the crux of the matter. That I mean, Hariri did the same prior to his assassination, and now Israel's invasion and attack, destruction of the city yet again, meant that those in the West were enriched one more time. And the only thing that Syria got out of it was they had to pull their troops out. The so-called Cedar Revolution, which occurred right after the assassination, which was a color revolution financed by the U.S., was forced to pull their substantial military presence there out. So everyone lost except the Israelis and the Carlisle Group.
And now we have what seems to be another revolution taking place after another explosion. Well, as we said, there is no evidence to implicate Syria or Hezbollah. That's been made explicit, although it hasn't been made explicit in the mainstream news headlines. The verdict was finally delivered August the 18th by presiding judge David Rhee of the Special Tribunal for Lebanon, the STL, based near The Hague in the Netherlands. The trial, which began in 2014 and cost about $1 billion, found that there was no direct evidence implicating the leadership of Hezbollah or of the Syrian Arab Republic in the attack which killed Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri on February 14, 2005. Patrick Seal wrote February 23, 2005, in The Guardian, that Israel's ambition has long been to weaken Syria, sever its strategic alliance with Iran, and destroy Hezbollah. Israel has great experience at targeted assassinations, not only in the Palestinian territories, but all across the Middle East. Over the years, it has sent hit teams to kill opponents in Beirut, Tunis, Malta, Amman, and Damascus. On February 16, 2005, Australian investigative journalist Joe Vials wrote of his theory on the Beirut bombing. Bearing in mind that this blast was caused by a highly specialised micro-nuke sourced from Dimona in the Negev Desert, he wrote, In a desperate attempt to slow down their forthcoming defeat in Palestine, Jewish special forces micro-nuked former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri, then instructed Western media outlets to falsely blame the atrocity on Syria. Gregory M. Ziegler, PhD, former captain, U.S. Army Military Intelligence, wrote on July the 23rd, 2005, on a large number of topics, Jovial's analyses are still the most penetrating and detailed available. He was one of the first to expose the problems in the stories of the Bali and Jakarta bombings and the assassination of Rafik Hariri. In the aftermath of the Hariri bombing, Lebanon became split between a US-EU-NATO coalition and another supported by Hezbollah and its allies Iran and Syria. The people of Lebanon and their politicians remained divided between those who wanted the tribunal to blame Hezbollah and others who see the court as a political tool to discredit Hezbollah. Well, two points here that I think are raised by this. The court itself says that this was a truck attack. This was a truck that ran into him. And yet you yourself and this Australian investigative journalist are saying that this was a highly specialised micro-nuke. So what's going on there, Matt?
Well, as I said before, there's no question that it had a nuclear component because the survivors had to be treated at a French hospital with radiation poisoning. Now, at the time, the only country actually where it was developed, the only country that possessed that was Germany. Now, I don't know if it was a U.S. factory in Germany or whatever it was. We've spoken on this show about Germany's strange involvement in Lebanese politics, you know, serving American interests. I mean, there were, you know, 2,400 soldiers from Germany in 2006 preventing arm from reaching the ports of Lebanon in favor of Hezbollah, etc. And Merkel herself said the mission of the German army there is to protect Israel, which is very strange because Germany normally doesn't do things like that. So the source of this micro nuke, the very nature of the damage, the huge crater, the weird condition of the bodies, this puzzled everybody. The trial didn't take place in Lebanon. It took place in the Netherlands, and there was almost no connection, direct connection to the site itself. They had to try to recreate it in Northern Europe. So there was no real standards here. And the prosecutor, of course, worked at the Enterprise Institute. He has been a part of CIA operations in Germany for years. So this is, you know, this is simply more of the same. And it was a very extreme way to create a color revolution. But the number one, as I've said, I've been saying this since 1991, the number one enemy of Israel, the left, neocons, etc., in the Middle East is Syria, because of their political system, because of the military, because of the popularity of their leaders, not just in Syria, but also in Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. And that's what this all comes down to.
For most people that don't follow this, I mean, they just don't understand what the obsession with Syria is. It's like, why have we got to go into Syria? Why have we got to start wars there? What is it that Bashar al-Assad has done that is so wrong? And nobody can actually come up with anything. There's these allegations of weapons of mass destruction. Well, he got rid of them. You know, they say, oh, he gassed his opponents, and it's proved that he didn't do that. But none of that explains why Israel and America are dead set on regime change in Syria. And the average person is just baffled by it. That's why whenever they have any votes on doing things in Syria, about 85% of people say, well, what are we doing in there? We don't want to be in there. I think even David Cameron was unable to get the Houses of Parliament to vote to intervene in Syria and impose a no-fly zone like they did in Libya. Well, the weapon itself does show Israeli involvement. There is one unequivocal fact. This weapon is equipped with a nano quantity of enriched uranium emanating radiations, which are quantifiable. Now, it just so happens that one of the passengers in Rafik Hariri's armoured car survived the explosion. Former Minister Bassel Flahan was taken to a top-notch French military hospital for treatment. The doctors were astounded to discover that he had been in contact with enriched uranium, but no one linked this to the attack. Technically speaking, the weapon is shaped like a small missile, a few tens of centimetres long. It must be fired from a drone. Actually, several witnesses assured that they had heard an aircraft flying over the scene of the crime. The investigators asked the United States and Israel, whose surveillance satellites are permanently switched on, to provide them with the pertinent images. On the day of the attack, the United States had deployed AWACS aircraft over Lebanon. The live feeds could help to establish the presence of a drone and even to determine its flight path. But Washington and Tel Aviv, which indefatigably urge all parties to cooperate with the STL, turned down the request. At a press conference held on 10th of August 2010, Hassan Nasrallah showed a video which, according to him, was shot by Israeli military drones and intercepted by his organization, which is Hezbollah. All of Rafiq Hariri's movements had been registered for months until the final day when all the surveillance converged on the bend in the road where the attack was staged. Thus, Tel Aviv had been surveying the area prior to the assassination, which is not to say, as Mr. Nasrallah himself points out, that they were the authors of the crime. So who fired the missile? This is where things get complicated. According to the military experts, in 2005, Germany was the only country which had a handle on this new technology. It is therefore Berlin which supplied and set up the crime weapon. An unprecedented development took place on 17th of March 2008 and 18th January 2010 when the German and Israeli governments held a joint Council of Ministers meeting where various programs were adopted, especially in the defence sector. At this stage, there shouldn't be too many secrets left between the Chatal and the Bundeswehr. The investigation conducted by Detlev Metlis is both steeped in ridicule as regards the false witnesses and tainted with the illegal detention of the four generals, to the extent that the UN Human Rights Council's Working Group on Arbitrary Detention formally and firmly condemned this excess of power. That's been missing from the mainstream media as well, that the Human Rights Council actually condemned this this excess of power. Well, I mean, that seems pretty clear that Germany was working with Israel. This was the weapon that actually caused this. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, there's something called Johnson's Law. I can't remember the guy who formulated it, but, you know, because this is so obscure and out of, even you know, experts in political science don't deal with this very often, the press could pretty much say anything. There's going to be very few people. People think of Hezbollah, they think of terrorism. They don't think of this large, very legitimate organization. Now, although the various agreements between Germany and Israel took place a little bit after the murder, that just formalized something that already existed. Germany has always been heavily involved in Lebanese politics, of course, always on the Israeli side. Now, this Detlev Metlis is the man I referenced before, the prosecutor, who, you know, spends most of his time in America. He works for all the neocon institutes in D.C., and he was on record as saying that he's gonna destroy the pro-Syrian factions. The four generals were those who were arrested immediately after the assassination, and they were bribed in various ways. I don't think their testimony led to anything, but they were the ones who, you know, apparently had ties with Syria. The fact is, Syria is very popular there. Syrian troops were really the only thing for a long time that kept the peace in Lebanon. They're religiously neutral. Their behavior has been decent, especially compared to the Israelis. And they're popular there, even with those who aren't necessarily pro-Assad. And the rallies, both back then and more recently, supporting Syria and their presence there are over 200,000, which, of course, you're not going to find in the Washington Post. And this is part of the problem. Washington can't allow this to be understood because it destroys their narrative. They're just this wild terrorist organization, savages, whether it be Syria or Hezbollah. The Syria-Iranian alliance goes way, way back. And that's the key here, trying to break that. It was Israel's motive, a part of Israel's motive. And they're a popular group. Syria is a popular country in Lebanon. They're the only thing that could keep the peace. And getting them out was in Israel's – that was the only reason this happened. And that's exactly what happened a year later.
So it seems the whole thing was a false flag, basically, to try and blame Syria and Hezbollah for it and turn the people against them. And it hasn't succeeded in doing that, despite the mainstream media still trying to say that Hezbollah were involved. I mean, what they are actually saying now is that this one man was involved, but it was without Hezbollah's knowledge. And they're not actually going to be able to prosecute him. They couldn't even get him on the stand to ask him the questions as a witness. So I would suggest that the Lebanese people are probably looking on this as just a complete pantomime. And the evidence is out there that Israel was behind it with Germany's help, unfortunately. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Lampshade. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.